You're listening to Sister Radio. In this show, we're talking with Joni Rapier of Cantina's Dance Project and the Groovaloos. In the show, we're talking about diversity, love, and faith. This is Sister Radio. So I'm here with Miss Joni Rapier, one of the most fabulous people I know. Say hey, Joni. Oh.
Hello, hello. You were quite fabulous yourself.
I feel like it's so funny because when I first met you, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but when I first met you, like, I automatically felt comfortable, and which doesn't necessarily happen all the time. Do people tell you that?
You know what? Yes, actually they do. They do tell me that. And it's one of the best compliments I can get because that I just love that. I love the fact that I can meet people and they immediately let down their guard, which is just so important because then you can have great conversations with them without walls being up and just really being yourself. So that allows me to be myself too. So when people are comfortable, it's a win-win for everybody. So I love that.
Yeah,
love
it is a win-win. We need more Jonies in the world.
Thank you, Joni. That's a huge compliment.
Yes. So, Joni, in the intro that I did for you, you'll hear it later when you listen back to the show, but I just let everyone know a little bit about you, that you work with Cantina's Dance Project, and that you and your husband are founding members of the Groovaloos, and now you manage them. But what have I left out? Can you just share a little bit about yourself for anybody who doesn't know you yet?
Yeah, what's so interesting about that is that you just mentioned two things that are dance, and I don't even consider myself a dancer, which is really funny, probably because I came into it so late. I grew up in San Diego, and I went through school, and I did lots of sports. I loved sports, but I also got into cheerleading, so that was kind of my first introduction to dance because we did a lot of dance. Now, this was in the 80s, so we were doing, you know, all those fun Cabbage Patch and, oh my gosh, I can't even think of them right now, the Roger Rabbit, certain dances. So I've always loved dance, but I was never funky. And I was the cheerleader type dancer. And so I then throughout school, I went to San Diego State. I always kind of had a bit of an interest, not like as a career, but an interest just to keep moving in. So I took, you know, maybe a random ballet class here or a modern class here, but, you know, few and far between. So when I moved to LA, I was pursuing acting. And lo and behold, I met Bradley, the hip hop extraordinaire, who became my husband a year later. I met him in acting class and we became friends. And he was like, hey, you want to come take my hip hop class? And I was like, ooh, hip hop, what's that? Let me go try that. So that was my introduction, really, to the dance world in LA, which was the hip hop dancing. Now, this was mid-90s.
Wow.
Mid-90s. So I actually went to school for graphic design, and I'm just one of those people, I'm very spontaneous, always have been. So I went to school for graphic design, took an acting class, said, oh my gosh, I want to be an actress. So graduated, thankfully I did get my degree in graphic design, but then a few months later said, I'm heading off to LA, I'm going to be a famous actress. and then met my husband and decided to become a hip hop professional dancer instead.
Well, so. And I was going to say, when you say, like, I wasn't funky, I'm like, lies you tell, because I've seen you dance, you funky.
No, you don't understand, but okay, so the funk came later.
Okay, I get that.
The funny thing is that Bradley, you know, took me to his hip-hop class, and of course, you know, I'm a girl, he's checking me out, he's not just my friend, he's kind of checking me out too, so I came to his class, but mind you, this is mid-90s, he was teaching hip-hop aerobics at Gold's Gym. I showed up in my spandex, because that's what you did, but he was still on the funky side of it, so when this girl showed up in spandex, he goes, oh no, and he wasn't sure whether he wanted to pursue something with me because I was so unfunky.
Wait, was it because I was born in the 90s, but I don't really remember the 90s like I remember the early 2000s. Was spandex like very white girl and he wanted you to come in parachute pants and like, I don't know.
So, yeah. Well, the thing is I was thrown off. I mean, honestly, I didn't know what hip hop was at that time. But I showed up for an aerobics class. I didn't show up for a hip hop class. So there was a difference, but he was teaching with a bunch of women who were in spandex. And I'm like, how was I supposed to know? So it took a while and I finally figured out kind of how to dress myself, but that was always a challenge.
I'm sure he liked the spandex. I'm sure he liked it.
I don't think he minded it in some way. Yes,
oh, exactly. Bradley, I hope he doesn't blush listening to this. But actually, and just a little bit about Bradley, because I know we're talking with you and you're kind of the woman behind the man, but he was recently in La La Land. He's an award-winning dancer. I mean, you two have really gotten to see and do so much in the hip-hop community and entertainment community.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I think you know, my husband came to LA, but he was part of a street dance group up in Canada before he came to the States, and they toured. They had a lot of success up there. They were like the first street dance group called Streetscape. And then he went to Vancouver. He was a really successful teacher up there, but he really wanted to make his way to LA. So he eventually got to LA, and he got to dance in the Super Bowl, two Super Bowls, which was fantastic. You know, music videos, he was choreographing. And very early on, we started the Groovaloos. And so we met in 95, got married in 96, and that same year we started the Groovaloos. But it didn't really get formed. We started playing around with the idea of having a group, and we actually won like a major dance competition in LA in 96, but it wasn't until 99 he got hired along with an amazing dancer named Jerry Randolph, who's a flow master. You look him up, he is extraordinary dancer. Partnered with him, and they did a humongous million. They were part of a $1 million Skecher industrial in Vegas and Atlanta around 98, and that took off. Like, street dancing became really huge, and Bradley formed the Groovaloos, and really it was one of the first groups that incorporated all the different styles of street dancing. So it had popping, it had locking, it had breaking. And at that time, a lot of the groups were all segregated. Like, you had a breaking crew, or you were a group of poppers, like the Electric Boogaloos, or you're the lockers, the Campbell lockers, from back in the day. But Bradley started, I mean, I don't know if he was the very first, but it wasn't happening very often. And we got a lot of notoriety in 1999 when he put together a group of people and we performed. Debbie Allen was the host downtown LA for National Dance Day, and that group of people became the Groovaloos.
Wow.
So yeah,
I like hearing you talk shop. I love hearing you you know.
Thank you. I usually hear my husband saying all this, so this is almost like my first time that I get to talk shop, so it's kind of fun.
Uh-huh.
I was just going to say, in regards to Bradley, yeah, he recently was in La La Land. That's just one of those great gigs that, you know, he knows the choreographer, and she calls him in, and they're like, yeah, we'll have you in this. You know, that was a really fun.
I saw him in his pink shirt.
That pink shirt really stood out. I thank the wardrobe stylist who ever put him in that. That was awesome.
She knew what she was doing. That's really cool. Did. So you guys, I hope I'm understanding the time frame. So you meet Bradley, you guys fall in love, get married, and then you started the Groovaloos.
Yes, that's pretty much that same. Well, it was kind of like a soft launch, but then it really took off in 99.
Okay.
When he partnered with Flowmaster, and that really was the start of the Groovaloos.
So what do you love about the Groovaloos?
Well, okay, we are going back now. We're talking 1999, and where are we? We're 2017. So a lot has happened between then and now. Well, the Groovaloos was just, for me, okay, honestly, I started dancing, you know, very late. So I bowed out really quickly because I wanted to have a family. We started a family in 2000. We had our son Marcus in 2001, got pregnant in 2000. So I only had a very short time dancing with them, actually. I danced with Bradley a lot from 96 to 2000. But I became more the manager. I was doing the graphic designs because I was like, I want to be with my son. I'm not going to some late rehearsals and dragging an infant. And what happened, too, was, mind you, my husband had a lot of faith in my dancing. But to be honest, I was not that experienced. So the Groovaloos were way past my abilities. They are and were the best dancers in LA by far. I mean, like, our dancers from 99, Allison Falk, who was the very first member along with Bradley and I and another guy named Lionel Rye, she choreographs now. She's choreographing Magic Mike in Vegas. Like, she choreographs for Madonna. She choreographs for Madonna. She choreographs for Pink. She's like the absolute top in choreography right now, and she was one of our first ones. So like, those types of people were and are in the Groovaloos. So I quickly had to bow out because my skills were nowhere close to some of these amazing dancers who really were and are the best dancers that are in LA.
But But you've been a part of it really
throughout. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
So now you're managing them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been a ride. I mean, one of the most amazing things about the Groovaloos that happened was that Bradley, along with his team, put together a stage show that actually ended up going on tour and played off Broadway in New York. And that was definitely the highlight of the Groovaloos so far. And that was tremendous that we had an opportunity to do that.
That's so cool. It's really cool. Yeah. So what is it like being a white woman in hip-hop? I'm really curious what your response is going to be.
Well, you know, if you asked a white person in hip-hop in another state, they would give you a completely different answer, of course. So for me, race has no relevance in hip-hop whatsoever. It hasn't had any relevance. It's literally a non-conversation for me. So the Groovaloos are made up of every color you can think of and lots of different ethnicities. So it's really about the funk. Like, if you bring the funk and the flavor, nobody cares what you look like. You could be thin, chubby. You could be tall, short. You can be any ray of color. Nobody cares. You bring the funk, you're playing ball. And I'm speaking from somebody in Los Angeles. So what I do hear about, but I don't experience because I don't really travel around the country very much. There's a lot that we do in LA and New York, but those are melting pots. That's where you find every color and people from all around the world, and everybody's accepted. It really is an accepting community of people. Race really, I mean, of course you're going to find that one or two boneheads that are ridiculous, but I actually don't know of them. But being white, like, that's a non-issue. It really has been. Like I said, you bring the funk and nobody cares. Yeah.
Well, I always think of, like, well, I know this is funk and this isn't hip hop, but you know, that's that song that play that funky music, white boy.
Yes, I'm sure I've danced to that one.
You know, like, and I always, to me, I always gravitated, my favorite genres happen to be hip hop and reggae, which are predominantly black artists or considered to be part of black culture. And so I was interested to see what you said. And even though I think somebody could maybe take apart what you're saying and, like, dissect it in a negative way, I understand what you're saying. You're saying that it's inclusive, that hip hop isn't just for one group of people. It's for everyone.
Absolutely. And what I realize, though, is it's also your attitude that you bring to the circle. In hip hop, they call it the circle, the cipher, where you freestyle, which is really the base for what hip hop and street dance breaking is the cipher. And the thing is that if you bring a negative attitude into that circle, whether it be towards somebody else's dancing, somebody else's color of skin or whatever, that's on you. And you just, that gets pushed aside within the community, because community just doesn't tolerate that. It really is an accepting community. I'm speaking from my experience in Los Angeles, or even the times that I've spent in New York, and also I've spent time in Canada where my husband's from. And it just, honestly, I'm so happy to say that there's so much, you know, hate out there that people talk about and see on TV, but it really doesn't play out, especially when you come to Los Angeles. Like, I know there's hard areas out there in the world and in the States, but I personally don't have that experience to speak on.
Well, that's so encouraging to me. I don't know what the difference is between New York and LA. I don't know if there's just, like, a lot of similarities, but I know that right now race is a really big issue in the world, but specifically right now, I'm just, like, talking about being an American and raising your children and being married to, being white and being married to a black man and having interracial children. What has it been like for you? Have there been, you know, hurdles you've had to jump over? Has it been a process where you just feel like it's ongoing of learning and connecting? Or what is it like for you?
I'm so glad you're asking me this, because I hope people who are listening understand. And I say this with complete and utter honesty, because sometimes people do not believe me when I say this, but I can tell you with complete honesty, my husband and I have been married for 21 years. And we have never felt the effects of somebody's, what do you call it? Their negative
bigotry, image,
negativity towards our relationship. And I attribute it because I have many friends who, because LA, oh my gosh, we're so mixed up. I have so many friends that are white and black mixed couples. I have so many friends that have actually a different experience than my husband and I. And if I have thought long and hard on this, and I think the primary one of the differences really has been that our attitudes. My husband and I, we don't walk around with chips on our shoulders or, you know, an attitude of, oh, this is my black man or this is my white woman. Like, my kids didn't even know that we were white and black. We never talked to them about it because it was a non-issue. We don't talk to them about what color they are or, you know, that their mom and dad is different. Like, they were raised in a home with a mom and a dad that loved them. And so I know other families who have actually taught their kids. I actually had some neighbors once who told me that they were teaching their three-year-olds that black people are black and white people are white and that's a race, and like really breaking it down. And they were telling me that my husband was black in color, and I was like so confused. I'm like, wait, you're teaching your kids that my husband's black, but my husband's not black, he's brown. I mean, there's a race and there's ethnicity, and there, you know, they were, yeah, they were very confused. So my kids didn't understand, and they didn't need to know. We're teaching our kids something that my kids go to school with all different colored kids. They don't know where they're from. You know, they might know, oh, they're from Mexico or they're from, you know, Canada or Africa, but they don't put a label on them. And I think that's where some people go wrong, is that they maybe marry somebody for the color of their skin and not for who they are. So that could be in their relationship from the get-go, or they walk around with the attitude that somebody is going to be upset at this, so I'm going to put up an attitude first. So I've just discovered that my husband, definitely being raised in Canada, he has a different attitude and a different perspective on race. But we honestly, I'm so, like, for instance, one time we were traveling through Canada, we drove from Calgary back down to Los Angeles, and we stopped in a small town, I think Montana, and there was a waitress that, like, didn't come up to our table for a long time. So we could sit there and go, oh my gosh, I bet she's not coming up to us because we're an interracial couple. I bet that's it. Or we can sit there and go, excuse me, ma'am, can you wait on us? And she may have had an attitude towards us, but we're not going to sit there and dwell on it, and we're not going to wonder whether she doesn't like our race. Or it's like, you know what? We've actually never had somebody go far enough to, like, be like, I don't agree with this, or, you know, yelling in our face or anything, thankfully. But I think when you smile and you let people know, hey, this is okay, like, we love each other, like, this is based in absolute love, and there's nothing wrong with two people who might be of different skin color getting together and loving each other. Once you, I think, put that energy out there, it changes people's minds.
Well, I love hearing that your experience has been really positive, because this is interesting. I wasn't even thinking to bring this up at all, but I had a boss that I worked for in LA, in Hollywood, and there was somebody who I was interested in, and we had kind of seen each other a little bit, and we weren't boyfriend and girlfriend, but she knew about him, and she asked to see a picture, and he was black, and I didn't think to say, oh, he's black, in my saying I'm seeing this guy and I like him, and so I didn't say anything to her, and she was, the first words out of her mouth were, he's black? What are you doing with a black guy? And I was like, so, and this is somebody who like grew up in New York, like has always been in a city, has like lots of people around her from all different cultural backgrounds. So I was so shocked, and she had told me, she like did a sit down and she said, you should be with somebody who's from the same race, or you're gonna have to really go through some struggles because people don't like to see it. And I was livid. I was so mad, because everything in me was like, you're wrong. I'm not one of those people who walks around being like, color doesn't matter. I think color is important. It's like, people identify with what color they are, and we should celebrate it. There's a reason why we're all different colors, and it's beautiful. Let's celebrate, you know? But absolutely. So I'm really interested. I was really interested to hear what you said.
Well, and I mean, I don't want to candy coat it either. I mean, there have been circumstances actually, but not within like Riley and I as a couple, but individually. For instance, my dad was not excited about me dating a black guy. I didn't bring that up. But also, it's because that's not at the forefront of my mind. I'm not walking around remembering and meditating on all the times I've been offended, or all the times somebody has had a negative comment. But my father actually was not down for me dating a black guy, and I didn't know this really. I mean, growing up, were raised, my parents were from Texas and San Diego and raised partially in like Virginia. So they knew what they had been taught. But growing up, my parents were great to everybody, but I knew that there was maybe some racism in the back of their head, but they didn't really understand why they felt the way they did. They just knew that that's what they were taught. So when I started dating Bradley, my mom shortly actually passed away after I got married. And my mom was absolutely fine with Bradley. But my dad was like, I don't know if I agree with this interracial stuff. And I had a great conversation with him about it. I was like, what do you mean? Jackie, my sister's been dating a Mexican for a long time. That's interracial. He goes, well, I mean black people. And I'm like, oh, well, what do you have against them? Well, he didn't know. He really didn't know. And he was like, well, my friends and I tell jokes about them. I was like, Dad.
You're like, I'm more of that.
No, you mean you can't tell your jokes anymore? I'm like, come on, Dad. You know, so, I mean, but after that, you know, he spent time with Bradley and he got to know him, not as the black guy, but as this is Bradley. And so we go into situations sometimes with these stereotypes of these ideas, but that's the thing is that we don't want to run away from them, like your friend saying, oh, don't do that because then you'll have mixed kids and they're going to have problems. No, we can't think that, oh, or, like my kids, they got no problems. I mean, I know we're in LA. It's different when you're in LA. I know that different states and different communities have different beliefs. Sure. But in LA, it's such a beautiful melting pot of people. I love it. It's really a great place to live for, that's one of the reasons that's really great is all the different people that are here
and for the sure. Acceptance for sure. Yeah. LA is so progressive and
yeah.
Very, I mean, it's got its problems, but it's pretty accepting.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes. Let's talk about this housing market and the prices we pay. Yeah.
No. Oh yeah. It's crazy. Well, so like with everything going on then with the political climate
yeah.
and things being talked about on the news and the sound bites and, you know, black men and women being, or people of color, not even just black men and women being, you know, shot and brutalized by the police. How has all of this affected you or affected your children or, yeah, how has that affected you, what you're seeing in the news?
You know, it's a very sad thing to say. It's a very sad thing to see, of course. It's heart-wrenching for everybody. And some of the things that are heart-wrenching are really just how messed up our media is. And so it's hard to know what's true, and it's really difficult to get real facts these days. So I think what's so important to focus on is getting facts and also not jumping to conclusions before knowing all the facts. So I think, unfortunately, I've seen, you know, there's both sides, right? There are black people being shot. There are also tons of white people being shot. There are cops that are racist. There are cops that are great. And we will always have that. We will always have good and bad cops. And we will always have good and bad people in the world of all kinds of colors. So for me, it's heart-wrenching because I do think that there have been, of course, some unnecessary shootings, and some of them are based on race and some are just based on fear. You know, cops fear for their lives sometimes too, of course, you know. So for me, it's a difficult topic to talk on because I think you can't talk about it without talking about how the media is so skewed. Because if you really look at facts and really investigate facts, you'll see that the problems that we're having with race and cops and black men are so much deeper, and they're so it's so troubling on so many levels. So it's I don't want to speak on something that I'm not 100% sure of. It hasn't been in the news quite as much recently, but when it was going on, I remember, you know, going on Facebook and seeing the hurting people, and it hurts me to see so many black people hurting that way. Yeah. To see them scared and to see them, but at the same time, what was infuriating me even more was that so many facts were not known before this cop was. I mean, cops have such an amazingly difficult job. I mean, people don't really realize that they put their lives on on the line, and to see that media coverage shift people's idea of cops being bad. And do you know what that can do to a society when we no longer trust authority? Like, that is chaos. And so for me, the bigger issue than blacks being shot, the bigger issue was the facts were not being told correctly, and people were just so upset at the authority that people started taking it into their own hands, and now cops are getting shot. And if we don't have authority, if we don't have police, we don't have safety. Yeah. There's so many things that are being broken down during this time, and I think the scarier thing is that we're not trusting our policemen anymore. That's scarier, I think, than believing that there's some cops out there that want to shoot black men. I think that number is so incredibly small and will get us in trouble.
Yeah, it's a really hard thing to fully comprehend, especially, like, yeah. I mean, for me, I won't speak for you at all, but for me, you know, I'm a white girl who grew up in the burbs. My struggles don't have anything to do with race, and I've never even had to really think about it. But a lot of my friends who are people of color, whether they're Latino or they're black, really, it's something on the forefront of their mind. And I actually just recently watched, I don't know if you have Netflix, but if you haven't seen it yet, it was really interesting. It's called 13th, and it's a documentary about the 13th Amendment. I think it's different. You know, I did grow up in near New England, near New York, so it's the view of race is very different than in the South. I just visited my best friend. Yeah. She does missionary work in West Virginia in the poorest county in the U.S., and they are so racist. They use the N-word, and it's very segregated. This is a black area, and I just realized, you know, there's things that are systemic that have been passed down since we brought slaves from Africa. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of white people, we don't really see it because it's not something we have to think about. But I think that there is but we can't, our default position needs to be love. I keep saying this, like,
100. Yes, and thank you for saying that, Isabel, because that's really the ultimate, is that if we continue to spread hate, like we are getting angry, right? We're getting angry that these things are happening, and then they're protesting, but then these protests become violent or people go out shooting cops. It's like the answer to racist cops needs to be love, right? Yeah. Because it can't be hate on hate.
Yeah.
Because that's where our society is going to crumble. So you're absolutely right. The answer has to always be love if we want to change anything.
Thank you so much for talking about this, because, like, I know it's not easy, and it's so easy to feel like I'm going to say the wrong thing.
No, you're absolutely right, and that was a tough one for me to say. And also, I don't want it to sound like I'm you know, pro, just, I mean, I am pro-cop, but I'm not just pro-cop. I mean, I am married to a black man, and his perspective is actually quite even stronger than mine on the same thing. He's all for love, and he's all for peace, and just seeing the hurt that is happening through misinformation is one of our biggest problems right now. Misinformation, the facts that are not facts that are being put out there, social media and how they just take something small and run with it. That's really, I think, should be our biggest fear right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and false information is a major problem. Yeah. It should not be happening.
True.
So let's change gears a little bit.
Just
in the next few minutes, I know we only got a couple minutes, but I wanted to ask you, so faith is a big part of your life. I know it is, because I know you.
Yes.
How has having faith shaped who you are as a person?
Oh my goodness. Okay, how long can I speak for? Because this is the longest cut. No, this is a good one, because it's so incredibly crucial and important. I became a woman of faith, like a real, like, saved, accepted Jesus, really said I'm going to live by faith when I was, do I want to give away my age? Wait, how about we just say the year? In 2004. So really, it's been, you know, 13 years of living by faith. And it has been an amazing process, and one that I wish I could have started sooner. And I know one of the questions you wanted to ask me, if I don't mind, I got a few questions ahead of time, was just, what would I change 20 years ago? And really, I wish I would have living by faith earlier. Because once you start that path of living by faith, you know,
God doesn't say that life will always be easy, but when you can live by faith and live amongst other people who also have faith and who are grounded in love, which is what the Bible and Jesus is all about, is love. Love first. Like, life could not be better, honestly. And when you do have faith, those things that you get to do in community with other people with faith, you know, reading the Bible that has just so many verses to live by that really can just change your life from a life of worry. You know, the Bible verses that I stand on all the time, Jeremiah 29:11, "For I know the plans I have for you, declare the Lord." That one, it's like knowing that God has a plan for me. I don't want to just lay in bed all day. You know, I've had bouts of short-term depression or feeling like this world is overwhelming, but my faith has gotten me not just through, but I've been able to live a joyful life beyond the circumstances of my life. My husband and I went through a really difficult financial time in 2013, and through our faith, and only through our faith, were we able to look back on that year, and it was actually one of the best years of our life. The year that we had to get people were donating money to us so we didn't lose our house, that we were able to eat. Like, we literally had no work and we had no savings. And it was through our faith and through our attitude that was provided through community, through church, that got us through that time. So faith is humongous, as you can tell. Very passionate about that. Yeah,
that's good. I know that's going to help somebody out there who's going through something, for sure.
Yeah. Community is huge.
And having joy. I mean, life is short. YOLO. Yeah, life is short. And you need to be able to have faith when you're going through the hard stuff.
Absolutely. I heard really a long time ago, I believe it's in Marianne Williamson's speech that she, I think Nelson Mandela gave the speech. I can't remember the year. It was in the 90s. And this is something that I give people this little nugget every time I see somebody that just has a bad attitude towards something going on in their life. Say, attitude, having a good attitude overcomes the battle. 90% of what's going on is attitude, and 10% is just your circumstances. So if you can have a positive attitude, because the way I look at it is God has this amazing puzzle he's putting together. He's got this amazing life for you, and either a puzzle or connecting of the dots. And when we maybe make a mistake or something doesn't quite go our way, he redirects us. And he's redirecting our path all the time, but we can't see what he's doing. So sometimes we could be grumbling that we didn't get that job, or that relationship didn't work out, or maybe something's happening with our kid, or whatever it might be, our health, that God is ultimately in control. And if we can just keep the faith that God is going to make good and be joyful, because the thing is, God could have just redirected your path out of a car accident or out of, you know, an investment that you, a horrible investment, you know, no matter what's going on in your life, we don't know all the time what God is doing for us. So that's why we're joyful in all circumstances, because we don't know what he's doing behind the scenes. It's like when somebody does something and you don't know who did it for you or whatever. It's like, you don't know that somebody did something for you and you, I actually don't know what I'm saying right there.
But no, but then you find out and then you're like, yeah. Oh, that's what was going on.
Yeah, like, we don't always know, and that's why, that is what faith is. We don't know what's going on. So isn't it a better life to live being sure that God has something great for us ahead? Like, that's what I live in, because living in L.A., there's another gig that's waiting to happen. There's, you know, we're always living in that expectation of something great is coming. And, or we can sit here and go, something bad's going to happen. Like, which way would you like to live? Yeah. I have practiced, and it takes practice. You don't overnight become a positive person. I've practiced my whole life expecting something great.
I love that. That's really cool. Yeah. Okay, so the final question I want to ask you is, what does being a woman and a sister mean to you?
Okay, and do you mean sister as in I've got some sisters?
It can mean whatever you want it to mean. I mean, for the most part,
sisters can mean so many things. I have three sisters.
Yeah, it's a hard question. Well, yeah, talk a little bit about that if you want. I mean, because I know you have your sisters, but then you have probably girlfriends who feel like sisters.
Yes. I would say, well, being a woman, I mean, hey, I've got two kids. Let me tell you, I feel sorry for my husband all the time, because I'm like, you know what? you never get to give birth and know what it's like. I mean, because men, oh my gosh, fathers are so incredibly important. They give their children something that we can't. But as women, the bond that we have through giving birth and breastfeeding and just, you know, loving them as God has made us to love on children. Like, I am so thankful to be a woman, because that bond that I have with my kids and the love I have for them is unlike anything, you know, it's a different love, of course, than I have for my husband. So I would say being a mother, but I mean, just being a woman, I think we're so, I mean, like, God gave me a great intuition. He's given me discernment, certain traits that are sometimes a little bit more woman than man. And just, yeah, loving, like I've been prophesied over about mothering, not giving birth anymore, that's done, but just of having, and like I've had, you know, like young men who we are in our dance groups, like, go, can I just get a mom hug from you? You know, they're missing their moms. Their mom live in another state, and like, to give that to somebody and to just love on people, I really love that. That's awesome. So to me, being a woman is really equal to love. Like, we are called to love. So I love that. And being a sister, I do have quite a few friends. I'm working on really nurturing some. You know, in LA, people are so busy, so I feel like I've got a lot of friends, and I really, you know, I'm holding tight to those ones who I've been doing life with for a while. But it's so important to have girlfriends, and to have, I love my sisters. They're dear to me, they're blood, and it's just so important, because we are supposed to do life in fellowship. We're not supposed to do life alone. So it's so important to be there for each other, and especially, yeah, especially women, because women need, guys love to go off and be in their men cave, right, their man cave, but women, we really need each other, and we need to be there for each other.
I love it. Well, I always say it's women supporting women. I mean, the things women can do, we are like unbelievable in the capacity that we have. Raise children, be a wife, be a friend, be a sister, be a daughter, like all of the things that we encompass. So I think you hit the nail right on the head.
And for a short period of time, be a professional hip hop dancer. Just
and then eventually get funky. I love it.
Now I'll have to send you a video clip of that one time I was funky.
Well, I've seen you get funky in church, okay?
Oh, okay.
Thank you so much, Joni, for coming on Sister Radio. It's such a pleasure.
Isabel, thank you so much for having me. That was really, really fun. Thank you so much.
I hope I spoke
to somebody out there and inspired them today.
I know
that's
you did.
That's my goal.
Well, we love you, and we'll have to see you on the funky side.
Full show.
Okay. Bye, Joni.
Thank you so much. Bye.
You've been listening to Sister Radio. That was awesome. We don't really get to talk about race as much as I want to on Sister Radio, because I think it's an important thing to be discussing and connecting with people about, and hearing different stories. But thank you, Joni, for talking about some hard stuff, important stuff, and spreading the love. You've been listening to Sister Radio. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and go to sisterradio.com. I love y'all. Sister Radio.